We're very happy to have a couple of segments here in studio with Randy Couture. He is here to promote the Bellator event 154, Davis versus King Mo. That'll be May 14th at the SAP Center in San Jose. And I was just speaking, Randy, off the air about how many times people want they want to see you fight again. And it comes up, huh?
Yeah, it comes up quite often.
Do you have that itch at all?
No, happily retired, focused on the acting career and trying to make good decisions and get more work there. And I think I got out at the right time. I made a good rational decision at 48 years old to find something else to do.
Do you still have the people who are like, oh, it's Randy Couture, and I'm going to show my boys that I can knock that dude out, or I'm going to show my girlfriend I'm tougher than him? Do you still get these clowns like that?
No, I never really got those guys. You get the guy that makes the offhanded comment, oh, you ain't that big, I thought you'd be bigger. And you smile, you laugh it off. Yeah, change your perspective, and I'm sitting on your chest. and then they're like, what did he say? But, you know, you never have anything to prove, generally. Those kinds of things happen, you know, when there's alcohol involved.
When Tito was in here, he said, whenever a guy makes a comment like that, he's like, well, what do you do for a living? Just want to know. And he's like, oh, I'm a plumber. He goes, well, let me tell you what I do. I get up in the morning, put my gear on, and I go fight all day. And then I, you know, take a rest. Then I go for a run, and then I fight all day. That's what I do with my day. Are you sure you want to go? Are you sure you want to go through this? You said acting, and we know that, we've seen you on the screen, and can we talk about a couple of your projects you have coming up?
Sure.
The one that you were telling me that you filmed Lost City of Gold in a pretty cool location.
Yeah, the Brujan, the Lost City of Gold, kind of based on a Central American or South American legend about a white witch and a lost city of Mayan gold, and kind of play a character that's akin to a modern version of Indiana Jones.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Shot down in Cancun, Mexico, and I think, you know, 6 to 9 months it'll be in post production and it'll be out somewhere.
Very cool. What's it like when you sort of get typecasted? Obviously, you're going to be the tough guy at first, right? And then you'd like, you know, you take acting classes and things like that. What were some of the things? It's like, look, I'm more than just the bouncer. I can play some other roles.
Yeah, exactly.
Here.
And those were what those first parts were, absolutely.
Right. Yeah. You know, I can kind of see that. Like, we need a guy who's going to be scary and
brings a physical presence to
absolutely.
To the deal. And then, you know, I think each and every time I go out, I get to learn a little more and test the boundaries a little more, make the box a little bigger, if you will, and try to learn some new skills. It's not unlike fighting.
What is it like when you, did you learn method acting? What were some of the tricks of the trade that you think about? Because Michael Caine said, never blink, you'll look wimpy. Like, there could be too much going on in your head, you know?
I think one of the first things I had to learn was not to talk with my hands. I have a tendency to talk with my hands, and it's very distracting when you're on the screen and you're moving your hands around. I think, finding a way to tell the truth is what acting really is all about. You got to tap into your own stream of experience, find a way to relate to that character, even though he may do all kinds of things in the script that you've never done in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you have to create a backstory that you can relate to come up with a reason why he does the things he does,
right,
so that you can find a way to tell the truth. And otherwise, it looks like you're trying to act, and it never sells.
Yeah, that's interesting that way. Like the person you're acting with isn't making you mad, but you got to think of something in real life that made you really, really upset, right?
Absolutely. And I've got a coach. I've been working with a coach for 6 or 7 years now that, you know, we do a lot of improv. We do a lot of things. And he helps me kind of find those ways to relate to those characters.
You've had a fascinating life so far. And when I think about going back to Stillwater, wrestling, Oklahoma State Cowboys, what were your goals then? It was just like, I want to be in the Olympics. What were you thinking?
Absolutely. It started, the Olympic thing started for me when I was in the Army. And I figured out that I could wrestle on that world stage and compete and win. And I think I took that to a whole new level at Oklahoma State. Obviously, a rich wrestling tradition there. And was part of a couple national championship teams, was in the finals of the NCAAs. That was a huge goal for me, was to win the NCAA championship. And I fell short. I was in the finals twice and lost twice. I was in the final Olympic trials twice and managed to come up short and not make the Olympic team. I think that left me hungry. That left me with a desire to still compete at 33, 34 years old. And I found MMA. And forayed into MMA on a whim, basically, and found something that really fit me that I really liked.
It's funny. I worked in TV all through the 90s, and we used to have this thing that was called shoot fighting.
Sure.
And they'd throw guys in the rings that were different weight classes, and it was almost like no rules, no holds barred. When we saw the MMA and the UFC and Strikeforce and all these, the structure of it come together and saying, we need to get this on TV and get Dana White, get people who know what they're doing. When you saw the sport in its infancy and until now, and can you believe in the last 20 years where that sport come to the international sensation that it is now?
That's amazing to have kind of been part of and witnessed firsthand the explosion. And obviously I think that first season of The Ultimate Fighter was really what turned it around and what changed it for everybody. The reality TV genre was a perfect vehicle to kind of break down people's misconceptions about who we were and who we are as fighters and what mm-hmm. we do and what it takes to step up in the cage and fight.
I think because some people on the one hand thought, well, it's Rowdy Roddy and Macho Man, it's fake, or it's two guys having a bar fight. And it's like, no, it's actually mixed martial arts and all the different disciplines of martial arts. So obviously you had a wrestling background and you could box mm-hmm. a little bit. What did you find out when you were getting to some of these like Eastern disciplines? How did you get yourself up to speed with those?
I think you just, you put yourself, you have to be willing to check your ego and put yourself out there and mm-hmm. keep an open mind. I realized right away, entered that first UFC, UFC 13 as a wrestler. I didn't have a lot of other background, and I knew wrestling was a great place to start. I knew wrestlers brought a lot of things as athletically and intensity-wise to the table, but I needed to learn a lot of other stuff. Immediately got on the jiu-jitsu bandwagon and the boxing, kickboxing, Muay Thai bandwagon, trying mm-hmm. to learn those parts of the game to try and be a complete, well-rounded fighter.
And not only were you a success, I kind of liken it to when Pete Sampras and Andre Agassi were our best tennis players in America, and Pete Sampras won a lot more, but he really didn't have a personality for the public. And Andre Agassi had huge personality and huge panache. So you take you as a success, but then also the MMA recognized, too, that you had an attractive personality. You had a look that they could market, because it's all about the cash in the end for these guys. But they could market you. So once you found out that you were sort of a guy that could not only be a very good champion at this, but also could be part of the Americana scene. What was that like for you as your career like expanded that way?
It went through its ups and downs, and I think it was always a struggle. I think because when Zuffa, the company that owns the UFC now, bought it, I was 39, going on 40 years old as the heavyweight champion, and I don't think they really cared for that too much. Having this new brand they wanted to build and change the face of, and establish all these things to kind of take it to the next level, and they had this older heavyweight champion. So I was kind of on the outs with them almost from the start.
Wow.
And although I tried to keep it simple, I wasn't like Tito or some of the other guys that kind of built these personas that they had to live up to.
Mm-hmm.
I was the guy next door. I was a normal guy. I had kids. I'd been in the Army. I'd been to college. I'd done a lot of things. I could easily have lived next door to you and you wouldn't have thought twice about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the average guy could relate to that, that they could see themselves mm-hmm. that way. And then I love to compete. Once the cage door closes, I don't become a different person, but there's a competitiveness inside me that came from years and years of wrestling that comes out in that environment.
And whoever lives next door to you knows not to steal your newspaper. Absolutely. We got one more segment with Randy Couture. And if you'd like to participate, 1-800-878-PLAY. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back on Sports Byline.